Hi, Lisa the K here for the Spectrum Talk, The Look Within. Welcome to the show. Wanted to talk to you tonight about a lot of events that are happening. The neat thing about doing a show that's live is that things are always changing. Just like that. You hear phones, you hear lots of different things. I wanted to talk to you tonight about things that are always changing. And as things always change, they change sometimes at the last minute, and it changes the direction of my show. Wanted to start out by talking to you about different things that I hear during the week. And then we'll get into our chapter about the DSM, because I have some things to present to you. And we're going to do it in this order. We're going to be listening to the news and different events, and I'm going to be adding pieces of interest. I want to put in a new segment, which is called People in Your Neighborhood. That to me is talking about things that happen that I observe and the mental health issues that go with it. Remember, mental health is health. I also want to talk to you about current events and rulings. And we're going to do some active listening where we talk about things we find in everyday news, not just in our news for our kids, but different things we see in entertainment and the industry on the radio and TV. We're going to talk about it from one week of my life and what I saw, and also summarize the mental health takeaways within the scenarios I'm going to present to you tonight. That's all before we get into the next chapter. Now, as you know, mental health is health. And more and more, we have role models, which are people that we respect, that talk about different things that we need to know about mental health because they've experienced it. One person is a football or baseball player who has dealt with mental health. And after retirement, he realized he had to talk about his time in therapy. So before we go into that, I wanted to tell you that there are many people that we respect and we look up to in the entertainment. After all, this is a show about the radio. There's many people that we respect that do have some issues. And it's interesting because just watching the TV, you find out about how they are always opening up. Now, in my previous broadcast, I talked about the DSM. We talked about what the DSM meant, the Diagnostical Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders. We discussed autism. We talked about the axes, 1 through 5, and what would be important to us, the global assessment, which means what is going on with all the things that are intersecting in your child's life. The reason that the DSM is so important is that is what people are going to use, doctors, therapists, and also you could use that in an IEP meeting. One of the things that I brought up from my past broadcast was you have to know the difference between diagnoses. There's some things that are problems, which we go through because we're going through a stressful period. And there's other things which are called disorders, which are lifelong incidences, which you need to know how to deal with and you need to know how to cope with. And moreover, your child needs to know how to cope with it. And that has to do a lot with active listening. We discussed a lot about actors and actresses that had bipolar disorder. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up because in the news today, you're going to see how these things not only reflect what is going on with your child and all these actors and actresses that I brought up in my last broadcast, but it also has to do with everyday things. And first, I'd like to go over what bipolar means. Bipolar is not just your everyday ups and downs. It's a disorder that affects you so much that one day you are so over the top happy, and then you are so over the top sad. And when you're happy, you get very excited. You're always moving. But when you're sad, you're extremely sad and you think about depression. And when you think about depression, it's like laying in bed all day and not even wanting to turn on the lights. It's more highs and lows rather than just, I'm depressed, I can get over it, and I can move on. It's really a condition which many times needs meds and therapy. And for those of us who really do have a bipolar disorder, it is mentioned in the DSM, this Diagnostical Statistical Manual, and it is treated by professionals. Now, we talked about some of the entertainers that had them. Frank Sinatra, we talked about singers, Sting has it, astronauts, Buzz Aldrin, anyone, anywhere can have bipolar. The reason I'm bringing this up and why it is so interesting to me is because we have many people who are bipolar in nature. I want to bring up someone from long ago that some of you might remember. Some of us are too young to remember her, but she was an actress in the 60s, and her name was Marilyn Monroe. Now, I saw this on a TV show, and I was so taken by it because it talks about what I want to talk about as far as the DSM. And the things that they mention in the show, they don't mention, well, this is from the DSM, but they did mention things like she was very depressed. One doctor said she had borderline personality disorder, which is in the DSM. One doctor said she needs a therapist because there's no boundary. Somebody else said she was severely depressive and she had episodes. She had a doctor, and sometimes you have to be careful about the doctors, who would give her different diagnoses, but would only want her to see him. And because of that, he sometimes, remember this is in the 60s, sometimes would prescribe medicine that would be too much for her. In 1962, the norm of the year was to prescribe barbiturates. So you had someone, an actress, Marilyn Monroe, who was prescribed barbiturates, was an actress that needed to be in the movies, needed to be on time, and many times she was late. And that could have been because of her propensity towards taking all these pills. And also she had a psychiatrist and she had a doctor. And I've always talked about things that are important. And one of the things is teamwork between the doctors. The two doctors really never talked to each other. So she was taking so many pills that sometimes didn't go together. What finally happened to Marilyn Monroe, who not necessarily had a great life growing up, which can also contribute to depression, is that in one of her last movies, they were tired of her being late. And she eventually got fired from the movie. And she really went into a downfall. And her when she unfortunately, it was felt that it was reported that she had committed suicide. And when I heard about that, I thought to myself, well, okay, you know, there's even controversy about that because she supposedly took a lot of pills and she really didn't get the help that she needed. Remember, that was in 1962. Let's bring us up to 1990. We had Robin Williams. He was a genius. People called Robin Williams a genius comic and a genius entertainer. He was a natural, and many people felt he had a lot of potential, and he could just come out on the stage and he could just do anything and everything for anybody. He had episodes of severe depression, but at the end, it appeared that he, with all his fame and everything that was going on and all the admiration he got, when you don't feel good inside, remember, mental health is health. When you don't feel good inside, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life because you don't feel the admiration. You don't feel the goodness. It's just like the commercial that I see where they have a person and they're talking and they're smiling and they have to put up a paper plate face of them smiling because and hide their real feelings. So you see their face and their face is unhappy. But then when they, But then when they talk, what other people are seeing are happy face. But it's just the face of a paper plate with a hat with a happy face on it. And that's the way a lot of people feel when they're depressed. They know they have to present a certain face to other people, but inside they're really sad, depressed, asking for help. And many times they feel they have nobody to talk to. That's why mental health really needs to be brought to the forefront and really needs to be treated as a health issue, which it is. It's coming along better, but not as quickly as it should. And there's still a lot of misinformation about it and ignorance about it. But back to Robin Williams. Unfortunately, Robin Williams was misdiagnosed. He must have been depressed for a while because he was found, in a position where they knew he had killed himself. And suicide is, you know, people are shocked by it. And it's like, how can he do it? He was so talented and so wonderful. But there must have been signs. And there probably were signs. But people are still in denial. And they still want to keep it in the dark. But what they don't realize is by doing it, it only hurts them. And it hurts their chances of getting better. So as a society, what we really need to do is understand that mental health, like I say again, is a part of health and should be treated as such. Okay. This is a show about Spectrum 23.9 is a show about arts and entertainment. So let's talk about arts and entertainment and how the DSM comes into it. I want to talk to you about Johnny Depp. That's something that's going on the tube right now that I watch because, first of all, I'm interested in mental health. And in the beginning, I thought, let me just watch it because let me just see what's happening, you know. But then I started really watching and I had been involved in the court system. And whenever people go through a divorce or anything like that, not to mention he's in the forefront of the entertainment industry, or he was, they have to bring in a multitude of people to discuss why they're at the place they're at. And the people they bring in are people that are psychiatrists, doctors, lawyers, different people that are going to talk for them. So what's interesting in the Johnny Depp case is that he and his ex-wife are going to court because she is suing him because actually he is suing her because he thinks that she said something, and maybe she did, maybe she didn't, in a newspaper that is going to, he claims, you know, made the movie industry not want him anymore. I believe it has to do with abuse. And she made a claim that he was abusive to her. And he counterclaimed this, they're suing each other for millions of dollars, but that's not the point. The point is that once you open yourself up to the political system, which is also a mental health system, you are taking for granted that people are going to see you in every day, in your everyday life, and they're going to accept you. Now, granted, he is a star, and his ex-wife, Amber Heard, is also an actress, but they're taking each other to court, and when you go to court, not only are they opening it up to everyone, so there's fans that see this, but they're talking about intimate things in their lives, which is a mental health issue in itself. They're opening themselves up. And what is so interesting to me was that besides the law that's going on and the attorney saying, you know, yes, no, and the other thing, you know, this shouldn't be put in, that shouldn't be put in, they have, like I said, they had a psychiatrist for each of the sides. Now, when you have a court case, you have to have, just like with everything else, you have to have a team of people behind you. So what was interesting to me, and how this relates to what I talk about in the DSM with our kids, is that these psychiatrists that are talking are specifically relating their diagnosis of Johnny Depp and his wife, Amber Heard, according to the DSM. Let me give you an example. The psychiatrist that was with Johnny Depp talked about the DSM diagnosis of his ex-wife. Because in court, they talk to the person they represent, the psychiatrist, and then they talk to the person that is representing by somebody else, which is the plaintiff. So they talked to him and he was, you know, fine, whatever. When they talked to his ex-wife, Johnny Depp's psychiatrist mentioned that she was bipolar and that she had a histrionic disorder. And what, you know, bipolar, we talked about, she had ups and downs. And that's a serious thing. So there has to be some kind of testing to back it up. And I didn't see it all, but I guess there was. And the histrionic disorder is everything's drama, but drama to the point where it's so dramatic that you have to be noticed. And Miss Heard got this diagnosis. And it's one person's opinion, one psychiatrist's opinion, using the DSM, because that was what was talked about in the court. But what happened was when it was her turn for her psychiatrist to talk about her, her psychiatrist explained it very well and said that she did not agree with the bipolar diagnosis or the histrionic diagnosis. She did agree that there were some issues with Ms. Heard, and she went into the specific testing. And that really caught my eye, because there is specific testing that you do and that doctors do, where they fit you into categories so you know where you are in the DSM. So Ms. Heard's psychiatrist said that, yes, she did have some issues, but it wasn't those two that were said by Mr. Depp's psychiatrist. What is so interesting is that, and I only heard part of this, but it was very interesting to me, was that Ms. Heard's psychiatrist did a very good job of talking to the court. And just like we make copies of our DSM evaluations that we take to other specialists and doctors and everything that we see, and we don't always understand it, but we take it because that's the way they diagnose things. This psychiatrist for Ms. Heard was diagnosing a pattern that she used that was specifically used to, I guess, to assess if a woman is, first of all, being abused, if a woman is depressed. I mean, it was very, very logical. It was a lot of technical stuff, which people don't understand, but it fit into a pattern, and she made a logical argument for why she disagreed with the previous psychiatrist or therapist. And what struck me was that the DSM is used for a lot of different things. We use it to talk about our kids. Other people use it in court. But I've always said we're more alike than different. And this is a case where we really are more alike than different, because we are talking about things that are relevant to us, but that we see our role models, our actors and our actresses having also. She also said that something that really struck me, and it goes together with what I've always said, because remember, we're generalizing here. She also said something that struck me very, very much when she said that there are certain things that when you or your child, you know, when you talk to a doctor, when you talk to a psychologist, when you talk to anybody, there are certain things that, yes, they want to know what goes on in your home, but that's private. You know, there's not a camera in your home. So when you relate things to your doctors, they should be taking you on your word. But sometimes people tend to embellish, and sometimes people don't. And especially in a court case of being sued, people are going to think, well, it's their word, and how can the doctor be sure? So what was interesting to me, and this I feel goes directly to what you can say if you ever have doctors or therapists not believe you or say, well, I don't know. We talk about a collaborative effort or other people that need to be there in your group. You need, you know, when you get your child evaluated, you should have the psychiatrist, but you should also have the doctor's report. You should also have the teacher's report. You should also have something that's gone at home. There should be different reports generated. And through those reports, different things can be picked up which fit into specific categories. And let me give you an example, which was what I saw today in this court case. Ms. Hurd's attorney mentioned that she had mentioned different things that go on in life. And of course, it was something that she said, and it was very personal. And of course, this is all out, but the two of them chose to do this, which in itself could cause mental health issues. But they chose to do this. And the attorney was going through this and talking about how she was told some personal things by Ms. Hurd, which is Johnny Depp's ex-wife. And remember, the opposing attorneys, it's their job to win the case. So they had said that, I object. This is hearsay. This is something your client told you, and how do you know it's true? And this is the whole crux of what I really, really caught me. Well, she said, yes, things are very private. And when people tell me things are private and I don't know, you know, if it's true or false, or they embellish it or whatever, because it's their perspective and I have to take it. But she said, what I do with that is I look at things that happen before and after, and usually different things are generated. Reports are generated before that give a glimpse of what is happening and what she's talking about, or what leads up to it. There's different things that are reported after that can lead up to what she's saying. Basically, what she said was, and what I have always felt was important, was you work as a team. Your word is an important part of the team, but you need that team working together to help the person or the therapist or the doctor helping you form a specific diagnosis. And behavior is connected to mental health and specific actions and mental disorders and specific disorders. So when people talk about, or in this instance, when this psychiatrist talked about different things that were told to her, she had said, I took this at face value, but I looked at reports generated before, because this just didn't happen right away. This was probably the last straw, because that's what usually happens in divorce or when somebody sues. It's like things lead up to it. You just, like I've always said, you just don't get up one day and said, I'm leaving, or I'm suing you, or I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So different reports are generated, and it puts together a story. And that story, generated by doctors and lawyers and visits to maybe, I don't know, shelters, or what goes on with neighbors or friends that's been interviewed, and reports by the police and this and that, that's all put together. So when the psychiatrist hears her side of the story, she has something to say, okay, that's her story. Let me go back and check and see if this is corroborated by other reports. And what corroborated means is if it fits in to how we got to be where the place we're at now. Now, I talk about, because I've seen more of Ms. Heard's side of the story on TV and not Mr. Depp, Johnny Depp, I can't really report on things that he has said because I haven't seen it on TV. But what I can tell you is that my interest is that I was very taken by his demeanor, which meant he was uncomfortable with something. Her demeanor, because she was uncomfortable, because it was brought out where, well, why is this happening? Well, it might be happening because both she and Mr. Depp came from dysfunctional families. And the reason I say this, and the reason I can't say this, is because it's on the TV. It's not something I'm pulling out from the air. It's something that is all over the news, all over the internet, all on court TV, you would say. So I can say this. So at the same time that they talk about their issues, I'm looking at how they are being represented legally by their attorney, their demeanor when certain things are said, the psychiatrist's demeanor and what she's talking about. My ears lit up when she talked about, she didn't say this is from the DSM when we talked about it. She talked about the different diagnosis. But then when she was asked about it, she said, the reason I can give you this diagnosis, and this is what's so important for our kids, is because the protocol that I use from the DSM that is followed by not only me, but doctors and other people, is something that's standard. And this psychiatrist felt that the other psychiatrist did not follow the standard that she that was supposed to be followed. That's why she got the wrong diagnosis for Ms. Heard. Now, I don't know if this is true or false. Now, it's not so much the trial, I mean, that I'm interested. I'm interested because it has to do with mental health, and mental health comes into everything. If they broke their arm, yeah, they might have been talking about breaking their arm, and they would have had to put it in a context of breaking their arm. But they put it in a context of why this affected their relationship and how mental health, which is health, affects relationships. Now, why am I saying this? Why is this so important? This is a story about Johnny Depp, who is, you know, a role model to some. In fact, they open the gallery of the court and they give his fans many tickets to come in. So you see people waiting in line, just like the different trials of O.J. Simpson and various trials. So it's partly, you know, it's partly what we're curious about, what we need to see, a role model. Lots of times we want to get in and see a role model. In fact, one time, the people who were commenting on the trial had mentioned that it's interesting to see all his fans, you know, either smiling or, you know, moving their heads. You know, it's very personal things. But for us, for some people, it's like, this is what they do. This is what they need to do. And this is, you know, they like doing it and that's fine. But I know I'm repeating myself a lot, but it's important to note here that the trial itself deals with the spectrum. You know, we talk about a spectrum, and there's a wide spectrum of different things. And in order to get to the bottom of it, you have to present your case in a very logical manner. And I'm certainly not an attorney, but I've always talked about how things are interconnected. And one of the things that the attorney said was things are interconnected because they're going to show why, if there was a dysfunction in this relationship, why these two people ended up being together and staying together for a long time, and why they learned to be together even though it was dysfunctional. And what was brought out by the attorneys was, and this gets into law, was you have to lay down foundation. And when you lay down foundation, it means how are you going to logically tell a story about how we got to this point? And my eyes beamed up because I'm always talking about telling a story. Like I say, you just don't wake up and you say, I'm doing this. So what was told in the show was that it was very good to put Miss Heard's attorney on first, because she is laying the foundation regarding her mental health or her overall health. And when she lays the foundation, and she did talk about some things about, you know, her childhood, some dysfunctional things in her childhood. We heard about Mr. Depp's childhood. You know, there's a lot of dysfunction there. But I think for both of them, even though they ended up being respected and popular actors and actresses, especially Mr. Depp, there was over the top dysfunctionality in their home. And because of that, knowing that and understanding that, that is thought by some attorneys, as was reported in the show, to lay the foundation to understand why Ms. Heard and Mr. Depp could stay together so long. And one of the things when I talk about mental health, which is health, is that we learn how to cope, and we learn how to cope when we can't get out of specific situations. And the bottom line is, this is going to bring why they stayed together, why they each had to get out of the marriage, and why they stayed in so long. So many things are going to be brought up about his past. And that only shows why we're more alike than different. All right. So I went through this whole thing. I did the whole story about my interest in this trial. How does it relate to us? It relates to us specifically because the DSM is all around us. The DSM is mentioned everywhere. And if we're going to talk about our child's health, we have to understand why it happens. Sometimes, and that goes to separating the disorder, like autism, from the problems, especially if the children are depressed and can get better, or come from a family which sometimes can be considered dysfunctional if there's a divorce going on, if there's money problems, if there's abuse. You know, children are in homes that is their home, and they know no differently. And a child with autism can be in a home that's the same as any other child. It can be dysfunctional and it can be abusive, and there has to be a difference. But so many times we don't want our children to be labeled just because they have autism that they're going to be depressed, or they're going to want to do this, or going to do that. No, they could be depressed for specific reasons. If parents are getting divorced, it's very depressing. Things are going on. It may or may not have something to do with their autism or their disorder. And that is why I wanted to reiterate that this is an example of how we are more alike than different. Now, a lot of people say everybody's on the spectrum. ADD is on the spectrum of autism. ADHD is on the spectrum. Depression is on it. We don't care about that. What you care about and why it's so important is you can see labels and diagnoses and differences of opinions with doctors everywhere you look. And we have a society now that's very open, that is not only is it providing entertainment to people, to some people, to see this out in the open, but it's also providing, from the other end of the spectrum, it's also providing a specific diagnosis by people who, like Mr. and Miss Depp and Mr. Depp and Miss Heard, who are going to make diagnosis about your child's life. So our show about entertainment and the radio is extremely important because this is a specific example how this goes into everything we see. Also, this is a show about the radio. Let me tell you about the radio. My husband and I got a new car. Okay, this is okay. We got a new car, and we don't know much about technology. We spent hours there. I mean, they were hooking things up and all this kind of stuff. Okay, so we had to drive a while to get the car we wanted. So we're driving, I'm driving the car, and it's all hooked up, and it's got the MapQuest on it, which isn't on there in the radio, but is in a thing on the side, right? It's plugged in. Well, my husband is driving another car and he's in front of me, and I turn on the radio and I said, I'm not touching anything. And the radio goes on and it's NPR. And NPR is National Public Radio. And they do talk about events that are happening, but they also talk about events that happen to entertainers and interviews and things you might not know about entertainers. And again, this has to do with the DSM. I was listening and my ears again picked up because I was not going to change that station. No way was I going to touch because I was afraid I'd do something. So I'm listening to NPR and an interview comes on with Ricky Lee Jones. Now, Ricky Lee Jones was a popular singer in the 1980s. She had a hit called Chucky's in Love. And she talked about her life, basically. And she was never really into the Hollywood scene or the music scene. And she told us why. And to me, it was amazing to hear this story because there were certain things that she recognized about herself early on. A lot of times when people say, well, I'm different, you know, I know there's something different. It could be a positive. It's not a negative. But mental health was an issue that she talked about. First of all, she said that when she was in school, she wasn't interested in it. Math had no meaning. Math had no relevance. She wanted out of school. So she took off at 14. She ran away. She said all her life, she was very, very impulsive and she knew it. But this impulsiveness led to a lot of depression and she was depressed a lot in her life. Her parents, she talked about her parents and what she felt was a family that could be dysfunctional at times. And how this helped create who she was today. She said her mom was from an orphanage and her dad was just, you know, not very attached to his family. And she felt her mom nurtured her the best she could, but, and they did an okay job, but because she felt her parents were a little unconventional, they moved around a lot. So she didn't form a lot of attachments. She also said that she knew she was impulsive and she liked being impulsive because that's the way she dealt with the world. And that caught my eye because sometimes everybody wants us to plan things and they think that's what's needed in life. But for her, being impulsive, especially when and I believe I understood this, especially when she felt depressed or she needed to move or she needed just to get out of, you know, she was like crawling in her skin. That meant just getting up and going somewhere. Now, to me, that sounds a lot like not exactly what we try to do with our kids, keeping them in one place, but containing their impulsiveness because they can get into trouble. And she stated that sometimes her impulsiveness got her into trouble. It was only later in her life that she realized that, yes, I am depressed. I go through periods of depression. I know I'm impulsive, but that's the way I am. I've learned that I'm a person who has needs that, and I have impulsivity, which means, you know, I need to just do it. I feel it and I do it. And I've worked out a way in my life to really be able to relax, even if it means moving on. Now, granted, she's in a situation where she can move on, but other people who are impulsive can find other ways to do things. They don't have to get up and go. They maybe can take a walk. They maybe can do something with their hands, or maybe can, you know, it's therapeutic. You can find your own therapeutic way. Now, this is a person who was very popular. She turned this impulsiveness and her talents into writing songs. She felt like she never really fit into the entertainment industry because she liked being alone. She liked the solitude, which a lot of us like. And she felt that she was never diagnosed, but if she had to diagnose herself, she can really say that there were times that she was depressed and she did see a doctor and she did get medication. The reason I'm telling you this is because she, without coming out and saying it, was seeing a doctor that did diagnose her, probably using the DSM or something similar to that. And she knows how to manage her impulsivity better. That's just one example. Another example is the songs we hear. We hear a lot of songs, and there's a couple of them that really mention about mental health, and mental health is health. Now, I'm going to talk about two songs in particular that I talked about in past broadcasts. The song that I want to talk about is, there are two songs. And the mental health takeaway is that songs reflect and talk about society. They can be personal, what you're feeling, but they can also talk about things that we see. And without giving them a diagnosis, they can talk about the actions. And two songs really, to me, give this flavor to mental health because they describe different things that are happening. The first song is a song by Helen Reddy. It's called Angie Baby. And this is a song that goes through stories. These two songs go through a story. But the first one is called, by Helen Reddy, is called Angie Baby. And it's about a girl who lives her life in make-believe. And she can't even function in school, so she's at home. And it talks about how she turns the radio on a lot, but how the radio is either living her life or she's living the life in her radio. And what's interesting is that the song mentions how everyone thinks she's insane. Now, what's the definition of insanity? I don't know. You could look it up in your book, but she gives an example how a boy from the neighborhood comes to tease her, but then all of a sudden he's feeling like, wow, I don't know what's going on here. And we have to use our imaginations in the song. And then all of a sudden this boy can't be found, and really he can't be found. So what went on? It's like, well, I don't know what went on, but they mentioned insane. They mentioned different words that you can see, or you can picture what's going on. They talk about how the boy sees the room spinning, and how she's, you know, even after the boy's gone, she's still in love with him, and how, I mean, who knows what happened? Okay. I automatically flipped to different shows because I watch these crazy, you know, these shows that talk about people who are profilers and what really happens and what people are doing. So my imagination's going there. So a song actually mentions insanity. A song actually mentions how people aren't paying attention to her because she's insane. A song actually mentions how you know, she's locked up in her room doing things, and how she's listening to the radio, and how she lives her life by the radio. But the question is the radio something she uses just to keep her mind busy? Or is it a time when she's actually, is she really insane? Or is it that she has a disorder? Could she be, I don't know, could she have a disorder? Could she be psychotic? Could she be OCD? Could she be some? But because the song mentions that she hurt somebody, it could be that there's a real issue there. But you don't know if it's real or it's not real, but the song presents that it's real. Okay, the second one is a song by the Beatles. It's called Maxwell Silver Hammer. And that tells the story too about, and what I, that song talks about how a person, goes through periods like in school and does this. And whenever somebody frustrates him, it appears in the song, this is what my take is, it appears that when they're not looking, he, you know, in a minute, he could just go off and go from ups and downs and really feels he has to do something. That also talks about, doesn't mention the word insane, but mentions the word, how Maxwell's silver hammer came down upon his head or her head. Maxwell's silver hammer made sure that she was dead. And that's pretty blunt and pretty significant. But it's, you know, to certain people, it's just a song. But to me, it really says that, hey, they're talking about mental health here. They're talking about somebody who's doing things, and either they don't know who's doing it, or if somebody does know who's doing it, it's like nobody's mentioned why he's doing it. And our song, and those are two examples of songs that talking about my feeling anyway, talking about what's going on in society. So the mental health takeaway is that we are surrounded by mental health issues. We are surrounded by mental health takeaways. We are surrounded by mental health opinions, mental health activities, things that really challenge us. And it's become, in one hand, to me, it's become very common to talk about it. But in another hand, on the other hand, it's become, sometimes people say, oh, it's, you know, the norm to be this way, or it's chic to be this way. No, it's not. You can't fall into that, because what's happening with mental health, which is health, yeah, you need to bring it to the forefront, but you need to bring it in a forefront in a way that's not only entertainment, that's not only in songs, that's not only behind closed doors. You need to really bring it out. And a way to bring it out is you getting to know about your child's mental health, because everyone has mental health issues. I want to talk to you about your child specifically, and where does your child fall? I'm going to do this real briefly, because to me, the crux of the show is not this specifics of what is said or not said. It's how things are being presented to society and how we see things. But you as parents and our children are living with it. We see this every day when we take our children to the doctor. Let me give you an example of something that's going on in my life real quick. What's going on in our lives is, you know, my son Robert has autism. And one of the things with autism is, it's called pervasive developmental disorder, which means certain things kind of get into every aspect of his life. And OCD, which is a disorder, is very indicative of autism. But I'm finding myself that I have to understand what autism, what OCD means to my child. So this chapter, very quickly, is, okay, where do our kids fall most of the time? So let's begin about OCD. OCD, many people talk about OCD. They think of people hand wash, and it is, it's repetitive. It's, you know, people do things, you know, sometimes they do it so much that they spend an hour washing their hands. And I've known people who've done this. And it is, if you don't understand it, you have to have a lot of patience. And the thing is, you have to understand is these people need treatment. It's a brain disorder. You can't help them. This is something they need to make them feel good. It's kind of out there for us, but for them, it's there and it needs to be done. It's a compulsion. And the person who does that is a person who needs hand wash, you know, has to wash their hand, who needs order in their life, checking things over and over again, counting, repeating words, silently talking to themselves. Now, not everybody that has OCD has autism, but people who have OCD are people with autism. Now, by definition, a person who is not autistic, okay, recognizes this as they get older. And if they assume responsibility for this, they understand that this is a little out of the ordinary, and hopefully they get help, they get meds. But kids, even our gen ed kids, do not recognize this about themselves. They don't have an awareness. They don't have the cognitive ability. Even typically, you know, the typically functioning kids with the normal milestones or the milestones that don't. So parents have to still recognize this. This is a condition which may go away, but it may have to be dealt with. And like I say, it's not something that, you know, you have if you're autistic. A gen ed kid could have it. You must have interventions and treatments. Now, I talked about how do you know the difference with any child? When a child does something at home and a child does something at school, it's a problem because for a child, school is their career. So if you see a child, even your gen ed child, do this, and he does it at school, it needs to be addressed. And it's going to be addressed differently than a child with autism. But for our kids, our children have OCD. Now, some of our children we recognize right away with OCD because unlike, they spend their time, you know, putting things in order, doing blocks, doing this, doing that. But, and this is where my story comes in, what we don't often see is the OCD, which is not so apparent, which is kind of hidden in the questions or the answers they get. Let me give you an example. In my family with my son, he often asks the same questions over and over. He knows the answers, but he asks the same questions over and over. And it wasn't until I sat down with the therapist because I said, why would he ask the same questions over? We've tell him the same things over and over. Now, granted, he has a schedule. He has it all written out. This is the thing. A behaviorist, as well as other people, believe that our kids get something out of doing what they do. Everybody does. They have a behavior because they get something out of it, because it satisfies them or they get attention. With my son, Robert, this obsessive compulsive disorder shows itself by asking the same questions about his daily life over and over and over again. He knows the answer, but he needs to ask the questions. So it's like, when you know the answer, look at your schedule. And in talking to my therapist and in understanding why the schedule is so important, I thought it was important because it gave him a list of things to do. For the first time, I really started putting things together in a different way. I knew he had always had OCD, but I began to realize that his OCD comes from him having to ask the same thing over and over, knowing the answer. So when he asks the question, am I going to watch TV tonight? Can I play with my, you know, CD? Can I do this? It's yes, he knows the answer, but he has this need to ask the question. It satisfies something in him to ask the same question over and over again. So the schedule is something, go to your schedule. The schedule will satisfy your need for OCD. And to me, that was a real eye opener. Now there's other children that need to, in the same light, that need to ask questions. And they ask questions because they want the answers. So they ask different questions over and over and over again. And you keep answering the questions. That also, in the opposite direction, is a form of OCD. But it is hidden. It's not the typical wash your hands. It's not, you know, unreasonable obsessive thoughts over and over and over again, although it is answering specific, you know, you think you're answering specific questions, you know, and you're like, why don't they know the answer? It does fall into them having to do something, which is my son's case, ask the question over and over again, because if he doesn't, it causes distress and anxiety. So that's why you want to replace it with different things where he can satisfy this need and not ask the questions over and over and over again. And if he does ask the questions, he knows to find the answer on his schedule. And that's a roundabout, simplistic way to say that that is where he's coming from. And I bring this up because, and I will talk about it more, because everything relates to our children. And this is just one example where you not only get the diagnosis from the OCD, but you have to generalize it and apply it to your specific child. There's also something called, and we hear a lot about disorder when we talk to our doctors and our mental health professionals. And this is a disorder. But our children lack insight into this because they are children still, or their development is lagging. So what you can do is give them the tools, and hopefully, like I've said in past broadcasts, hopefully the goal is that your child will know, I have these thoughts and I need this answered, but I'm going to get up and I'm going to make a schedule and I'm going to have something written down. So when I feel this way, I can check it off or I can look at it. Important mental health thing, because like I said, mental health is health. Important mental health thing takeaway is we are not saying that don't have these thoughts. It's not right. Something's wrong with you. This is the way their brain works. What we're saying is with an understanding or more of an understanding of why they do the things they do, we can come up with ways to help them deal with this disorder and make it a better experience, not only for them, but for their lives and for other people around them. Now, I want to go into a lot of other things, but we are running out of time. And I do want to say that there is a difference between obsessive compulsive personality disorder, which is also a disorder, and obsessive compulsive disorder, which is different than a personality disorder. I want to get into that on my next show because I think that comparing the two will be very interesting. And remember, you have obsessive compulsive disorders. It goes into other things too. It can go into an eating disorder because people eat, you know, to satisfy something emotionally. And if they overeat, you know, it's just like Eaters Anonymous. It's just like the commercials you see. Why do we eat? Well, you see this on the TV all the time. We eat because it fulfills something. But why do we overeat? Well, maybe when we were little, you know, in order to satisfy us, when we're feeling unhappy, we were given food and that made us happier. So we're making connections. Again, this is just making connections. So I hope that I've given you a few examples of how things in life are always interconnected. And I know it might be a lot to take in, but the important issues are that we understand that we are working with our children and we putting their needs first. We may not completely understand it. We may not be wired like they are, but we definitely need to work with them because these things will be with them for their life and with our life. Before I leave you today, I want to talk to you about two events that have happening and things that we can do as a society if we want change, because this is definitely a mental health issue. I want to bring up that this week there was a drafting of a proposal by the Supreme Court that had voted to overturn Roe v. Wade. And Roe v. Wade has to do with abortion and abortion rights. I'm not here to give an opinion. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. But I think it's important that you understand what you're talking about or fighting about, or whether you're fighting for it or against it. And the important thing is that we need to vote. One of the issues that came out of this politically was that this is something, a draft has never happened before. Usually we get the opinion of the Supreme Court and it comes one time as an opinion. For some reason, this has been leaked out by Politico, which is a news agency, that they have gotten this draft. They didn't want to report anything that was false to the public. So they backed it up by calling some clerks from the Supreme Court who said, yes, this is an actual opinion. There are now protests going on everywhere about it. And like I say, I'm not here to say yes, no, or otherwise. I'm here to say, get active. Get active in what you want to do and know the facts. People don't have to agree with you, but as long as you're informed and you take a stand, you can do it peacefully. But beware that you have to know what you're talking about. And you have to, you know that this will affect not, you know, even if you are a parent of a teenage child or a young adult, or this will affect many people it will affect you, whether you have children who are dating or young children. There's things that go on. This is a societal problem. So just keep that in, and we need to work as a community. So with all this that's going on, and this is something that happened in 1973, Roe v. Wade passed in 1973. So those of us who are under 50, all we've known is that people have had abortion rights, whether you agree or not. Now it might be a change. And whatever side of the fence you're on, you are going to be affected by this. And your knowledge from here on is critical. We'd also want to say goodbye. We lost someone very special from rock and roll history, Naomi Judd. She was 76. She died, I believe, April 30th. And this is particularly relevant to me because her daughters say that she died of a mental illness. We know that she got hepatitis C as a nurse a long time ago before she went into her singing career with her daughter. Her daughter Winona Judd and her performed as the judge. They performed many songs, a lot of country hit songs. Ironically, like I said before, if you feel bad inside, it doesn't matter what you do for the world. Ironically, I believe it was 2 days ago that she was up for an award. So she knew she was up for an award from the Country Music Hall of Fame or Country Singers. Because her daughters say she died of a mental illness, different things go through your mind. The important thing is we all have mental health issues. And sometimes they get to the point where, like any person, singers, entertainers are not void from this. They feel it too. And I think another person who died of a mental illness, and I bring this up too, is we lost Robin Williams a while ago. He had been misdiagnosed, it turned out, but he was also suicidal. And we know that for a fact because of the way his case was presented. That's all I'm going to say about that. But the issue is, keep informed. Know you're not alone. Know that everybody gets this, but know that you are special because you deal with these kind of things all the time because of your situation with your child. Keep informed. I want to close the show by thanking you again for tuning in. And I hope that I've opened your eyes to certain things. And I hope next time you're aware of different things. And I hope this to make you feel that you're not alone. So for all of us at Spectrum 23.9, I want to wish you a good evening. And as always, I would like to close my show because the family is always very important to me. And that's where it starts. So I want to wish everybody happy Mother's Day. And I want to leave you with this: home sweet home. We furnish it with friendship. We decorate it with laughter and we warm it with love. This is Lisa the K signing off. Have a wonderful week. And I hope to see you next time. Thanks again.